Hey, good morning again.
Good morning.
If you're new to Next Level, I want to invite you to participate in something that we do each and every week. It is the live page of an app called YouVersion. YouVersion, any of you guys use YouVersion during the week? Let me see. Awesome. That's a good handful of you. YouVersion is a great app. It's the way that I read the Bible. I outside of studying for Sundays, I use the Bible completely electronic by using YouVersion. It's a great app, but on the app, there's a live page. The steps to get there are up there, and it's a chance for you to interact a little bit more with the talk. Specifically, you can take some notes. There's a poll in there this week that you can take, and there's a chance to give online if you want to do that, or if you have prayer requests, you can submit it to our prayer team. Well, today, before we dive into our talk, into the next part of our series, wanted to spend a few moments just talking about something that we celebrated and did last month. At our church, we do something each and every month, and if you're new, maybe you haven't caught on to this, but our church, our mission statement is to love Jesus, love people, and make a difference. And that third part of our mission statement is something that we really want to do. Each and every month, we want to find practical ways in which we can get out into the community or out in the world and literally make a difference in the world. And we don't do this to draw attention to ourselves or because we think that we're great. We do this because Jesus has done something in our lives, and we want to give back to the community. So every single month, we spend 4 weeks or 5 weeks in the month talking about a cause that you can get behind. Now, we do this for a couple reasons. Number one, we do this because I want to highlight some amazing organizations that you can learn about, and then you can, on your own time and what you find you're passionate about, you can go help them. Just because we're not focusing on it anymore doesn't mean that you don't have to still support them or can't get plugged into them. We want to highlight some great organizations that are doing some amazing things around the world, and we simply go to these organizations and say, how can we help? What do you need from us? And as a church, we're going to try to help you out. And so for the month of April, We focus on providing animals to some areas of the world that don't have the basic need of food, that there are literally people who are dying because of starvation. In fact, the latest stat that I saw is 805 million people don't have enough food to eat. 805 million people around the world don't have enough food to eat. And so for the month of April, we partnered with Heifer International, which is an organization that allows you to look through basically a catalog or like a magazine, online magazine, and you can pick animals that they provide, and then they ship them to the nations that need the food. Now, the cool thing about this is they don't just give them some food. They teach them how to provide food for themselves. So some of the animals that they get, they use it to, you know, use the milk, or they'll use chickens and use their eggs, and it's a way for them to learn how to feed themselves and to better their economy and their world. A great organization. And here's what we learned. We learned that for $5,000, we could send 2 of every animal that they provide. And so for the month of April, we were trying to fill an ark. Get it? 2 of every kind of animal. We're filling an ark to see if we could provide 2 of every animal that they provide. Simply $5,000 would do that. And we got the totals in after last week, and we did not hit $5,000. We actually raised $6,628. That means we were able to fully fund an ark plus an extra goat, cow, water buffalo, llama, sheep, pig, flock of chickens, flock of ducks, hive of honeybees, and a trio of rabbits. That's incredible. We were able to do that. Now, even more, that was incredible. But one thing that I loved about this, and I love about the generous nature of our church, is that we were able to meet a huge need and go above and beyond, but yet you guys still gave, and we were able to meet budget and pay our bills, and that's why the lights are still on and the air conditioning is running, and we didn't fire any staff. We were able to pay everything and raise an additional over $6,000 to make a practical need. So I wanted just to let you guys know of that, and we can celebrate that one more time. I'm really proud of you guys for that. All right. Now let's dive into the talk. Today we're continuing our series entitled
Love My Life,
or the acronym LML. And this is a series that we've been digging in for the past 5 weeks now. And today I want to talk to you about something that I think and I hope will help you love your life. But before we dive in to our text and before we dive in and talk about this idea and talk about loving our lives, I want to give you a chance to talk with God. And for some of you, it might be a wrestling match. Some of you haven't talked to him in a while. Maybe some of you have some issues with God or questions or wonder. You're just struggling. And I invite you to speak to him. You're here, so you might as well just say, hey, God, if you're real, if you're really active, if you're still moving, Would you speak to my heart? And I'd like to invite all of us just to simply say that prayer. God, would you speak to my heart? But I want you to add on to it. And the addition is, God, would you speak to my heart? And would you help me to do whatever you tell me to do, no matter how hard? Would you guys spend a few moments just praying and talking to God? God, we don't understand everything that happens in our world, and we don't have an answer for everything. What we do know, though, is that you are good and that you love us. And so we ask that in your goodness, you would speak to our hearts. God, that you would meet us where we're at today, and that you would challenge us, and that you would show us through your love what we need to do to change. We ask you to give us the courage to do whatever you tell us to do. In Jesus' name. Well, in this series, LML, what we've been talking about is that it is up to you to love your life, that no one is going to hand you a great life on a silver platter, and no one is guaranteed a great day. In fact, we all go through difficult days. We go through days where nothing goes right. There are some days where it is easier to love our lives. There are some days where it just feels like you hit every green light. You ever had one of those days? It's like, I can't lose. Like, today is like just an amazing day. And I actually, after going through multiple weeks in a row of having just one stupid bad thing after another happened, I actually had a moment that I was like, man, I really do. I love this moment. This week, I had something that was actually the biggest struggle for my week. And I'm admitting this knowing that it is incredibly embarrassing and pathetic and very tiny. But the biggest struggle of my week, the thing that I wrestled with the most, the thing that made me say I do not love my life, is the fact that a huge movie was coming out on Thursday, and I wasn't going to be able to see it. And it was wrecking me. Specifically, if you don't know what I'm talking about, Avengers 2, Age of Ultron, was coming out on Thursday night, and I had made plans in my mind to go see this movie. I did not communicate those plans with my wife. And so 2 weeks ago, when I said, hey, let's get a sitter and go see Avengers 2, she said that she already had plans. She'd been invited by a friend of hers named Alicia to a ladies' night. And not only was she taken out of the equation, but my brother was now taken out of the equation because his wife was also going to this cursed ladies' night. And so I was trying to be a team player, and I was trying to, like, not just completely show how devastated I was. But if you were here last week, we talked about our garage falling apart and the fact that our fish disappeared and our tire got slashed. I'm not proud of this. But what weighed on me more than any of that was the fact that I was going to have to miss the premiere of Avengers. Like, I was wrecked inside. And I was like, this is just awful. And I was scheming, and I was trying to figure out something to do. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I was going to have to miss the premiere. And I'm a huge movie buff, and so this really was wrestling with me. Well, Wednesday, Alicia, who was throwing this ladies' night, texts my wife and says, you'll never believe it, my water just broke. And so she had to go to the hospital to have her, like, 16th kid. She's had a million kids. And so she goes to the hospital. My wife tells me this, and the very first words out of my mouth were, that's the favor of God right there. I'm going to see Avengers on Thursday night. Your ladies' night is now off the table. I instantly called my brother, and I said, we're going. I love my life. We're going to see Avengers. And we did. And it was awesome. If you haven't seen it yet, you should go see Avengers. So there are some moments where it's like, man, this is really cool. This is, everything's rolling my way. There are other times where you're like, man, I cannot catch a break. In fact, I don't know if you've ever uttered the statement or the sentence like, this is just my luck. This is just my lot in life. No matter what I do, I always end up in a difficult circumstance or in a frustrating circumstance. And typically when I utter those words, it's because I'm at Walmart. Anyone else? Anyone else ever have frustration at Walmart? It is crazy. They have 127 lanes that are available, but they only open four of them. And so, like, you're literally wrapped back at the electronics with your, like, 11 items. You have one more item than the 10-item line. And, like, when I go up to walk in a Walmart lane, I strategically try to place and try to pick, okay, which lane is going to move the fastest. And then I always play this game. I say I pick this lane, and I mark where I would be if I would have picked another lane, and I see who gets up to the cash register first. And without fail, I always lose this game. Always. I always pick the lane with the one person who still writes a check. Like, I pick the lane like with the person who has that one item that's not in their system, and they have to turn on their little light and ask for help. Like, I constantly, and I'm like, every time it happens to me, I say, this is just my luck. I can't catch a break. Every time I pick a Walmart line, it is the worst line. And some of us just feel like that with life. We just feel like, man, it is tough to love your life when things just don't go your way, when there's difficult circumstances. And what we've been talking about in this series is that we've got to learn to love our life even in the midst of difficult circumstances, even in the midst of mundane, annoying things that happen. We may not love everything that's happened to us, but we can love the fact that we're still breathing and that God still has a plan for us. And we can live for something so much bigger than our problems. When we live for Jesus, we can learn to love our lives. And so today, I want to talk to you about something that I think is robbing a lot of us from loving our lives. It is the fifth thing in this series, if you're keeping track. And today, I want to talk to you about fear, and specifically how fear is robbing you of your ability to love your life. Now, when I'm saying fear, I'm not talking about fear of like snakes or spiders or clowns. Those are all legitimate fears. I get that, okay? You can have those fears. I'm talking about things like the fear of commitment. The fear of committing to a relationship because you know that it might be hard, or because you're worried that there might be something else better out there. I'm talking about the fear of failure, not trying something new because you are so scared that you might fail. I'm talking about the fear of looking foolish, that you are afraid to do something silly because then someone might not think that you have it all together. I'm talking about the fear of being authentic. And so many of us are so afraid to be real that we've created these alter personalities. And we act one way in public, we act another way in private. It's a fear of being authentic, of being real, that if you knew the real me, you might not like me very much. And so I'm going to give you an image of what I think you'll like. I'm talking about the fear of being wrong. The fear of saying simply, I'm sorry, I blew it, I made a mistake. There are fears that we have that are deep-seated fears that are actually robbing us from living the life that God has planted inside of us and desires for us. And so today, what we're going to do is we're going to dive into a text that's going to challenge us all. If we're willing to apply it, if we're willing to do what the text says, it's going to challenge us all to make the most out of our life and to make the most out of moments and to overcome our fears. This isn't an easy thing to do, but it is a practical thing to do if we're willing to do it. I want to give you a little bit of context about what we're about to read. We're about to read something that is written by a guy by the name of Paul. And if you're a part of Next Level, if you've been a part of Next Level, we have an acronym that we describe Paul. And what do we say about Paul? He is a what? PT peer or primetime player. And he's a primetime player because he wrote over half of what we call the New Testament. Specifically, he's a primetime player because if it were not for Paul and what God did through Paul's life, Christianity would be an extension of Judaism, and it would simply be Jews who believed in Jesus. All of us would be left out. Specifically, in Paul's day and age, every single one of us in the room, unless you were born of a Jewish family, all of us were considered Gentiles. And a Gentile was not it was not something that you wanted to be. It was, in the Jewish world, you were a dirty Gentile. You were looked at as worse than homeless. You were looked at as a pagan who was going to fry like bacon. You were looked at as a low end of the totem pole, that you, because you were Jewish, you had the favor of God. But these Gentiles were pagans, and they worshipped all sorts of things that were not the one true God. And you would look down, Jews would look down their noses at Gentiles. Well, Paul feels called by God to break out of the Jewish circuit and to break out of the Jewish circles and to start going around the world to these pagan Gentiles and telling them about Jesus. And literally, because of his missionary journeys, Christianity ended up spreading until it became the official religion of the Roman nation, and Rome made this the Christianity the official religion, and then it took over the world, and it is what we have today. It is literally because God used one man by the name of Paul to take Christianity to the Gentiles. Well, Paul, on one of his missionary journeys, went to an area called Ephesus, and Ephesus is where he spent more time than any other place he ever went. He spent 4 years in Ephesus. And so he really got to know the people there, and he really had a love relationship with the Ephesians, with the churches that he built in Ephesus. Well, Paul leaves Ephesus, and he ends up obeying God and going to Rome, where he ends up being arrested simply for being a Christian, and he gets thrown in prison. Well, while he's in prison, he writes letters to the churches that he started, and one of the letters, we have a copy of it, it is called Ephesians. And we're going to read a section of Ephesians to as a people. It's written to a people that Paul dearly loved, that he really cared about. And it is a section that's going to help us overcome some of our fears that is causing us to miss out on the life God wants for us. We're going to dig in. You can read with me on the screens or follow along in YouVersion. Ephesians 5, 15 through 20. It says, "Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Do not get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery. Instead, be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another with psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit. Sing and make music from your heart to the Lord, always giving thanks to God the Father for everything in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ." My kids absolutely love to play the game of chase. I don't know if you have toddlers, if you have elementary school age kids. Your kids, I'm assuming, love to play chase if you have younger kids. At some point in the human condition, we transition from loving to running to hating to running. And I don't know when that is, but my kids have not learned to hate running. In fact, the thing that they love most in this entire world is playing chase. And literally sometimes for hours, we will play chase. Specifically, what we do is there is a loop in our house through the kitchen and the foyer and the living room and then what we call the TV show room, and it makes a big circle, and we will chase around this circle forever. It's just running around in circles, running around in circles. And the game of chase really goes up a level when my wife gets involved. There are times when my wife, I don't know what inspires her, but she just walks up and she picks up a kid and she starts chasing after me. And it is my goal then to pick up the other kid, because we have twins, and to run for my life. I don't know a lot of things in this world, but what I do know is that you never, ever want to be it. I don't know what it means, but I know that in the game of chase, you don't want to be it. And so when my wife picks up a kid, I start running like crazy. And I'm just like, I'm not going to let her tag me. I will not be it. There have been many times in our game of chase where I have lost track of the fact that I was holding a kid. And I was so focused on running that one of my kids' heads may or may not have hit a door frame. This has happened on multiple occasions, and it kind of is part of the game. It's part of, you know, just kind of what happens, that our kids, we call it getting bonked, that they get bonked. And in fact, the other day, we were playing a game of chase, and my son was running around, and he fell, and he actually hit his head on our fireplace. And I actually have a picture of his boo-boo. Now, thankfully, he has the world's hardest head, and it didn't actually split open. But I wanted to show you this picture because it is amazing to me that in all the times when we play chase, all the times when they've been injured or hurt, it has never caused them to say, "I no longer want to chase." They get hurt, and then the next day, they want to go back to what they wanted to do in the first place, which was play chase. They constantly are wanting to chase, and they want to chase so much, I've become convinced that God has hardwired human beings to chase. I'm convinced that there's something inside of us that is like, I want to chase, I need to chase. And we start off in elementary school chasing other kids, chasing other people. We grow into chasing love relationships. It's chasing that boy or that girl that you had that crush on, started to fall in love with. And then from there, we chase education. Some of us chased it to get a college degree or a master's. And then we chase a job or a career. Some of us are chasing careers, and we start running out and chasing after it. And then for some of us, it's chasing family. And then from there, we chase hobbies. And we are constantly, even though we may not be chasing other human beings or literally playing the game of tag, we are chasing something. And in this life, I feel like one of the worst things that can happen to you is when you allow fear to cause you to stop running after what God has wired you to run after. Something happens in life. We go through phases where we get bonked. We go through phases where we hit our head on a proverbial doorpost. We go through phases where we ask her out and she says no, and it causes us to have fear of rejection. We go through phases where we apply for the dream job and we don't get it, and it causes us to have fear of rejection. We go through phases where all of a sudden we were chasing something, we were feeling great about it, we were chasing because God has wired us to chase, but it didn't end up the way that we wanted to. And so we allowed fear to creep in, and fear started telling us, "I don't want to play this game of chase anymore." Even though we're wired to chase things, and even though God has wired us to chase after something and ultimately to chase after Him, fear has come in and it's caused us to stop doing what He has wired us to do. And I believe with all my heart that we all chase something. We will either chase God or we will chase after our own selfish desires. We all chase something. We will either chase God or we will chase after our own selfish desires. And here's how you can tell if it's a selfish desire or not. If you chase after something and it ends up with you not getting your way, it inserts fear into your life. Because it was a man-made dream, it was a man-made something that you were chasing after, and because you couldn't accomplish it on your own will, with your own power, now you're afraid. When we chase after God and He leads us to chase after things, there is no fear of rejection because you can't fail when you chase after God. Everything, even if you don't get your way, is it a learning opportunity, is a chance to learn something about yourself or to learn about God. But fear has crept into so many of our lives because we've been chasing after something and we didn't get what we were going after. And so Paul says in his letter to the churches in Ephesus, he gives them this piece of advice. He gives them this challenge. And it's going to help us stay on course, because if we're wired to chase after God, if we need to be chasing after God, but we're not because there's some fear living inside of us, we need to make sure we do what Paul says. And let's look at the verse again. Ephesians 5, 15 through 16 says, "Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil." Be very careful how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. This is such an important verse that I want this verse to stick with you. This is such an important verse that I want you thinking about this verse on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday and next Saturday of next week. I want you thinking on this verse a month from now. I want you thinking about this verse a year from now when you've forgotten this talk and you've forgotten my stories and you've moved on from this and you've got a million other things going on in your life. I want you to have this verse down in your life. It's so crucial for Christians, especially Christians today. And so because I want this verse down in you, we're going to actually do something that we've done before, and we're going to memorize this verse. We're literally going to spend some time memorizing it. We're going to get this verse inside of us because I want you thinking about this verse. If you don't get anything out of this talk today, I want you to at least walk away and say, "I memorized the text for the day." And so it is a proven fact that motions help us memorize things. So I've come up with some motions. I'm going to teach you these motions, and then you're going to apply them, and you're going to do this without my help, okay? So the verse that we just read says "be." It starts off with the word "be," and so we're going to do the sign language letter for "be." Put your thumb in front of your hand, okay? "Be," okay? The next step is "very careful," and so I just imagine like Scooby-Doo who's like sneaking into a house and he's scared, and you're just going to like kind of tiptoe where you're at, like, okay? So "be very careful," and we're going to stand up in a second so you can tiptoe better. Be very careful how you live, and you're just going to make a house with your hands, okay? Because this is where you live. "Be very careful how you live, not as unwise," just hit your forehead, "unwise, but as wise," okay? You guys are doing good, tracking with me. "Not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity." And in the younger culture, if you watch TV, there's something that they do often. It just looks like they're making the most of every opportunity, and that is they make it rain. So for making the most of every opportunity, you're going to take your hands and you're going to do this. The image is with dollar bills. I've never had enough dollar bills to make it rain, so we're going to do it with the Bible verse. So making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil, and you're going to take your fingers and put them up by your head like the devil, okay? Because the days are evil, okay? All right, we're going to go over this again, and then you're going to stand up, and you're going to do this, and it's going to help you. You're going to drive in your car on Wednesday and say, "What was that verse?" And you're going to start doing these motions. It's going to help you remember it, all right? "Be very careful how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil." Okay? You guys did pretty good. It's off the screen. You think you can do it on your own? All right, maybe? All right, let's try it. Everyone stand up. We're going to do this. It's going to stick. All right, this is an all play. Everyone stand up. You've been sitting for a few minutes anyway. Okay, here we go. All right, you ready? Go. Okay, that was all right. That was all right. You get a C. All right, now we're gonna try it one more time because I really want this verse to stick. Okay, don't sit down. Some of you are like, "I'm done with this. You already sat down." No. Stay standing. All right, here we go. I want you to get this. All right, here we go. "Be very careful how you live, Awesome. You guys did great. Give yourselves a hand. All right. Be very careful how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. Why is this so important? Why is it so important that you be very careful how you live your life, not as unwise, but as wise? It is so crucial for you because the days are evil. Translation, there are so many things in our world today that can cause us to have a distraction and can take our attention off of God that we can actually miss out on opportunities. And I love what the verse says, is be very careful in how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity. And you and I live in a world that is trying to rob us of opportunities. We're not even present when we're really present. When we hang out with people, we're on social media, on our phones, and we're halfway listening to people. We are missing out on opportunities left and right. And Paul says, hey, listen, if you really want to love your life, if you want to get the most out of this life, then you've got to learn to be wise. And what does it mean to be wise? It means that you submit yourself to God and say, God, what do you want me to do? How do you want me to live? What would you want me to do in this situation? I'm seeing something and I don't even know what to do, but I feel like that you would want me to go there. You would want me to say this. You would want me to live this way. I'm going to be wise and I'm going to learn what it means not to be wise and I'm going to throw that away. Why? Because the days are evil. And I want to make sure that I make the most out of every single opportunity. I recently learned a new acronym from one of my staff members. It was an acronym that I hadn't heard before. And at first I didn't know what she was saying. I thought it was almost offensive, but it was not offensive. It was the acronym FOMO. Anyone heard the acronym FOMO? Okay. Well, I hadn't heard it either. FOMO stands for fear of missing out. Fear of missing out. And it is said often by youngsters these days that when they're hanging out in an area or they have to work or they're in a situation where their friends are doing something that they can't go to, they say, I'm suffering from FOMO, fear of missing out. I wish I could go to Avengers on Thursday. I can't. FOMO. I wish I could go hang out with my friends. Everyone else is hanging out. I can't do that. And Paul is saying that we need to have a serious case of FOMO, that we need to have a fear of missing out on God's best for our life. That if we're not careful, if we don't learn what is wise and unwise, that we can literally not make the most of every opportunity and we can miss out with the opportunities that we're given. That is, that you can miss out on an hour or on a day or on a week in your life where you are supposed to experience something amazing, something for God. You can miss out of it. And we should have a little bit of FOMO inside of us that says, I don't want to miss out on God's best for my life. I don't want to miss out on what God has wired me to do. I love what the psychologist, Dr. Neil Rose, Dr. Rose makes a distinction between two different types of regret. There is the regret of action and the regret of inaction. The definition is simply this. A regret of action is doing something that you wish you hadn't done. That is a regret of action. And we all have these. We all have, in a given week, we have some things that we say, I wish I wouldn't have done that. I wish I would not have gone there. I wish I wouldn't have said that. I wish I wouldn't have lost my temper. I wish I would not have made that decision, and I have some regret with it. But there's also, inside all of us, this regret of inaction. And regret of inaction is not doing something that you wish you had done. So regret of inaction is, I didn't make that phone call, and I wish I would have. I didn't ask her out. I didn't go with him on that date. I didn't save money like I thought I should. I didn't stick to my diet. I have some regrets. I wish I would have done something, and I didn't do it. And that leads me to regret. Now, psychologists have shown, I want you to stick with me on this because it's so important for you getting the most out of your life. Psychologists have shown over the course of an average week, action regrets outnumber inaction regrets 53% to 47%. So in a given week, it is very close about the things that you are sad that you did, your regrets of action, and the things that you did not do, your regrets of inaction. But watch what happens over the course of a lifetime. But when people look at their lives as a whole, inaction regrets outnumber action regrets 84% to 16%. Translation, right now you are missing out on things that you don't even know you're missing out on. And right now you are making decisions that are unwise, based off what you feel in the moment and decisions that you feel in the moment and things that you want. Oh, I really want this relationship. Oh, I really want to spend my money this way. Oh, I really want to go there. And there are things that are causing you to miss out on God's best for your life. And you're not even going to see this till you get to the end of your life. And when you get to the end of your life, the things that you're going to care about the most are not the regrets of the things that you did. It's going to be the regrets of the things that you did not do. And why do we not do things that God has hardwired us to do? It is because we are living with great fear. We have this great fear inside of us that says, I don't want to be a failure. I don't want to look foolish. I don't want to be rejected again. I tried it one time and it didn't work out. I was playing chase and I hit my head on the door frame and I will never chase again. It is a fear of being hurt or rejected or making a fool of yourself. And ultimately, at the end of your life, it is this fear. It's going to cause you to miss out on things. And what you're going to regret is not just the decisions that you made, the bad choices that you made. The ultimate thing that you're going to regret is the decisions that you made to not do something, that you're going to miss out on something, that you're going to look at your lives, and it's the inaction. It's the things that you said, I wish I would have gone on more vacations. I wish I would have spent more time with my family. I wish I would have told them about Jesus. I wish I would have saved more money. I wish I would have been more present when my kids were little, because now that they're older, they never call me anymore. I wish that I would have done something. The fear is going to cause you to miss out, and ultimately, it's going to be your greatest regret in life. I love this quote by John Gardner. It says, one of the reasons why mature people stop growing and learning is that they become less and less willing to risk failure. You and I as adults, we started off playing chase as kids, and we just ran with reckless abandon, and we would hit our heads, and we would fall and hit our faces on brick fireplaces, and we'd get back up, and we'd keep playing chase again. But as we get older, we start feeling the hurt and pain. And we say, I don't like it when they rejected me, and I don't like the feeling of not being popular, and I don't like the feeling of someone disagreeing with me, and I don't like the feeling of not knowing all the answers, so I'm going to pretend to be something that I'm not. I don't like these bad feelings, so I'm going to hide some things in my life. And it is this fear that has caused us to stop taking risks that will ultimately cause us to have regrets in our life because we're going to miss out on things that God has wired us to do. I love the quote by Hudson Taylor, unless there is an element of risk in our exploits for God, there is no need for faith. Unless there is an element of risk in our exploits for God, there is no need for faith. Christianity has become far too safe. In the Christian world, in the church world, we are way too consumed with what you should not do, that you need to stop drinking and smoking and sleeping around. And I think all that stuff, we should be concerned about it. I think we should obey God. I think all that stuff is really important. But I think we've become hyper-focused on what we should not do, that we've not talked about what we should do. And it's the stuff that we should do, living a life for God and living for Him and making the most of every opportunity. Those are the things that at the end of our lives, we're going to look back and say, man, either I blew it or I made it. Because all of us have regrets, but it is the regrets of inaction, the regrets of saying, I didn't take that chance, I didn't swing when I had a chance, I didn't ask her out, I didn't go with him, I didn't save my money, I didn't do something. Why? Because I had fear inside of me. What are you doing right now that if God didn't show up, you would fail? What are you doing right now that if God didn't show up, you would fail? If Hudson Taylor is right, and unless there's an element of risk in our exploits for God, there is no need for faith. And if you can't come up with an answer for what are you doing right now that if God did not show up, you would fail, then you are living far too safe of a life. And at the end of your life, you'll have some regrets. And the regrets are not going to be just, oh man, I wish I wouldn't have done that. Your greatest regrets will be, why didn't I take more chances? Why didn't I take a risk? Why didn't I make the most of every opportunity? Why didn't I learn how to be wise and follow after what God has for me so that I can make the most of every opportunity? Because some opportunities are missed, and we live life like there's no expiration date. We live life like there'll always be a tomorrow, but there's not. Eventually, every single one of us will be on our deathbed, and we'll look back and say, why didn't I do more? Why didn't I help more people? Why didn't I love greater? Why didn't I let people see the real side inside of me? Why wasn't I more authentic? I have some areas for you to take some risks. I think often when I talk about risk, people think of it as these big things like skydiving or bungee jumping or doing these crazy things out there. And I think that there are some small risks that you and I can do that can help us make the most out of every opportunity. I want to give to you a handful of these. These are some risks that I think that you need to take. This is the application for this week. So every one of these may not apply to you, but the ones that do, you need to start working on them this week so that you don't miss out on these areas. Areas to take risks. Number one, risk being generous when it would be easier to be stingy. Risk being generous when it would be easier to be stingy. In this life, there's something inside of us that if you've been burned with money or if you grew up with not a lot of money, there's something inside of you that says, I've just got to save, save, save. And I am all about saving. In fact, I think every single one of us should learn to get out of debt and have no debt in our life. And we should learn to save 80%, or 80%, that'd be awesome. We should learn to save 10% of what God has given us. It should go straight to savings. 10% should go back to God or to the ministry in which you're plugged into, and we should live off 80%. I think all of us should set that as a goal. I think we should save. But some of you are so stingy with your money that you're missing out on opportunities to have God use you. I love this quote by Anne Frank. She says, no one has ever become poor from giving. No one has ever become poor from giving. And some of us need to take some risks. Some of us need to take some risks. And I'm not talking about dumb risks where you invest in something that is not a wise decision. I'm talking about risking in people who could really use your service, who could really use your money. Taking a risk, helping the homeless. I'm talking about helping a neighbor. I'm talking about making a risk and saying, yes, it would be great to save that 20 bucks, or I could take that 20 bucks and try to make a difference in the world. Some of us need to risk being generous when it would be easier to be stingy. When it would be easier for us to say, oh, they'll just waste my money. They're just going to use it for drugs. They're not going to use my money to help themselves. When it would be easy to be stingy, some of us need to take a risk and say, I'm going to risk. I'm going to give to make a difference in the world. Number two, risk being authentic when it would be easier to be fake. We live in an incredibly fake world. Everyone that you know is fake. Everyone that you know. And everything that you watch has an element of fakeness to it. Everything, every single one of us is trying to be better than we really are. We have phone voices. You can be yelling at your kid and then you answer the phone, hello, right? Every single one of us struggles with being authentic. We struggle with saying, there's something inside of me that is not good, and I'm so afraid that if you see the negative side of me that you're going to reject me, so I'm just going to bury it deep inside, and I'm only going to show the people that are closest to me. So the only people closest to me are going to see my temper, are going to see my addiction, are going to see my problems. But everyone else, I'm going to pretend like I have it all together. And there's a fear inside of us that someone, if they find out that we're not perfect, especially if you're a Christian, there's a fear that if someone knows that I don't have all my junk together, then they're going to judge me or they're going to think that I'm not that great of a person. And so some of us need to risk being authentic when it would be easier to be fake. And that doesn't mean that you just come out and you tell every single person in the world every bad thing that you've done. But it does mean that you need to have someone in your life that you can say, hey, I do have some struggles. There are some things that I can't handle. I do struggle with my finances, or I do struggle with looking at things on the internet that I know I shouldn't look at, or I do struggle with this substance, or you know what, I struggle with pride, and I constantly feel like I have to be right, and I struggle with this, and it is destroying my marriage, and I can't overcome it. No matter how hard I've prayed, no matter how many verses I've memorized, I can't overcome it. I want to be authentic with you so that you can help me learn to overcome my struggle. Number three, risk asking for help when it would be easier to be prideful. Risk asking for help when it would be easier to be prideful. We're not very good at asking for help. We're not very good. We want to be self-made men and self-made women. We're not very good at humbling ourselves and simply saying, hey, you know what? Could you make me better? And some of us need to swallow our pride and we need to ask for help. There are some areas where we need to ask for help. It blows me away that in our society, we will take a car to a car dealership or to a mechanic to get our car fixed, and there's no pride in asking them to fix our car, but we are deathly afraid of asking someone to fix our marriage. Why do we care? Why do we care more about our car than we do our marriages? No one in here has a perfect marriage. If you're a human being, you struggle in your marriage. And yet we are so afraid to let someone know that we might be fighting or we might not be getting along, that our pride causes us to not ask for help. And some of us just need to go out there and ask for help. And we need to see a professional counselor. You need to seek Christian counseling for your marriage, or even seek a friend and say, hey, it's not on the verge of divorce, but we're struggling and I need a little bit of help. Risk asking for help when it would be easier to be prideful. Number four, risk love when it would be easier to live in isolation. Love is one of the things that if you've ever been burned by love, if you've gone through a divorce, if you've gone through people who have left you, if maybe you were like me and in a military family where constantly people were moving around you and you didn't have friendships for a long period of time, that fear of rejection is real. And it is so scary to be authentic and vulnerable with someone because it's like, well, they may take it and they may reject me, they may leave, they may not like me anymore. And so some of us need to take a risk on love when it would be easier to live in isolation. You need to go out there and get yourself out in the game again. You need to try love again, even in a broken relationship. Maybe it's with your kids. Some of you have had kids who you haven't talked to in a while. And maybe you need to risk love, even though they hurt you, even though they said some awful things, even though the last time you talked, it ended bad. Some of you need to risk love and say, hey, I'm going to try to break through. And this may not be perfect. It may be ugly. It may be messy. But I'm going to do my best to break through because I want to love you well, even though it would be easier to be isolated from you. And number five, risk pursuing God's dream for you when it would be easier to let it die. Risk pursuing God's dream for you when it would be easier to let it die. If there's not something in your life that is causing night, and it is causing you to say, if God does not show up, then I can't do this, then you haven't begun to live the Christian life. The Christian life is not just about obeying a few rules and not doing a few things. It is by actively, passionately pursuing Jesus. And when you follow after Jesus, he leads you to do something. Following Jesus is not just about not doing some things, it is about doing some things. And if you want to eat to the end of your life and just be exhausted with how well you've lived it, and just be able to die happy and say, man, I have zero regrets about the things that I did in my life. I live my life to the fullest. Then it's going to come with some of you doing some wrestling and saying, God, why have you put me here on this earth? What have you wired me to do? What is a passion that God, why did God plant you here in this time, in this age, in this place? If you haven't found that out, when you find it out, watch how you come alive in your Christian life. I believe that if we overcome some of these fears, that we'll learn to make the most out of every opportunity. And I think if we don't, if we continue to live in fear, then we're going to miss out. And Paul would say, we've got to live like wise people and say, hey, you know what? I have an expiration date. I'm not going to be here forever. So I need to learn how to make the most out of every opportunity. Would you guys pray with me? God, thank you so much for this day. And thanks for the challenge to live for you and the challenge to do what you've called us to do. God, this idea of fear is not easy because so many of us have real fears. We've been rejected. We've been hurt. God, so many of us have gone through things and we've taken some risks before. But God, those were manly and womanly risks. God, those were risks that were just made up of ourselves. And so our pride got hurt. Our feelings got hurt. But there is no rejection when we follow after you. God, you've made it easy. You believe in us. You think that we can do it. So God, would you help us to overcome our fears? Would you help us to take some risks when it would be easier to play it safe? And God, would you help us to not miss out on opportunities that you've given us? Would we take the most, God? Would we tell them? Would we tell others about Jesus? Would we invest even when it's hard, even when it's sticky, even when it's messy? And God, would you do immeasurably more than we could ask or imagine? We love you, Lord, and we thank you for how you're working in our lives. In Jesus' name, amen.